24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked.
Profanity Nation.
Yeah, it's the new era of man for some old school fans with a new school brand. We got money on the mic with the plan in hand. And Stat Pat to his left, they go hand in hand. And to the right, we got Simster, he putting it down. It's the Profanity Nation, we running the town. Yeah,
it's the Profanity Nation.
Profanity Nation.
Welcome to the Profanity Nation podcast, where professional players deserve professional fans. Joined here as usual by Scat Pat, Money Mike, and of course yours truly, Jay Simsta. We're going to talk about some cool stuff tonight. We're going to talk about the NFL draft, the virtual NFL draft, and the latest episodes of The Last Dance, which involved Dennis Rodman. Let's get started with the draft, guys. Number one, Ohio kept their homegrown superstar, I guess, Joe Burrow, quarterback. What do you think about that, Stat Pad? And what do you think about some of the other picks out there?
Oh, so I do like the pick. Obviously, I mean, he was the consensus number one across the board. So the fact that he did go number one was no surprise. I do like that he does bring a little bit of toughness to the Bengals. He's also a little athletic. He got a cannon, and he's looked like he's going to be the real deal. Andy Dalton has just been there for the past like 10 years. They've been stuck in mediocrity, but I think Joe Burrow will take him over to the next level. And they also had a good first pick, SC representative. Michael Pittman Jr. went to the Bengals as well, so now he has a wide receiver that I love that's going to go there. So it should be good for the Bengals, and they should at least win more than two games next year.
What do you think, Money?
No, I think it's a great pick. You know, look, I love Coach Ogeron. I wish he would have been USC's coach. I love the speech that he gave to Ogeron at LSU. You know, he has all the intangibles, and I think he's a really good player. I think he's going to be a star, definitely in Cincinnati. Michael Pittman, you know, I agree with Pat. He's going to be a good, solid receiver. I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but he's definitely going to be a good, solid, dependable receiver for him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who's the loser of the draft? Is it Aaron Rodgers?
You know, that's a good question. Honestly, yeah, I think it would be him. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, on first glance, because of the fact that they did draft a first round quarterback in the first round, and then they also didn't give him any immediate help. So it wasn't like they drafted a wide receiver. Wide receivers in this draft was crazy deep, and the fact that they didn't draft anyone that's going to be able to make them make an impact was kind of like, well, they drafted his successor, and at the same time, I'm not giving any help. It's like, what's the message they trying to send to Aaron Rodgers? So, yeah, I would say, if you're right, I mean, if we had to pick a loser, yeah, I would say Aaron Rodgers may be one of the guys that lost in the draft.
But let me ask you something, though. I mean, isn't it interesting that Jalen Hurts went over to Philly with Carson? Because Carson Wentz, I know they gave him a $100 million contract, but for me, Wentz gets hurt. And his predecessor, his backup won the Super Bowl for them. So what happens if Wentz gets hurt again? And then now you got Jalen Hurts over there. You already know he's a winner. Mm-hmm. You know, do you think his job, even though they gave him $100 million, is in danger? Because how many times, because Wentz has gotten hurt every year, what, he's missed at least four or five games every season. So how much, huh?
Important games.
And so he got a Super Bowl ring. They got rid of Nick Foles and kept Wentz. What is that going to happen again? If Wentz get hurt, and then Jalen Hurts comes in and is successful?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think the pick was dumb, and that's nothing against Jalen Hurts' talent. because I think Jalen Hurts is a baller. As you can see, he balled at Alabama. He transferred. He went to Oklahoma. He balled there, too. So it's not like he's not a baller. I mean, he's a gamer for sure. But it seems like, like you said, if you're going to spend $100 million and literally you're making Carson Wentz your franchise quarterback, there's no reason for you to pick somebody to back him up that is conceivably could be someone's starter if they need him. So that's why I didn't like the pick for the Eagles. I thought it was, redundant. They're already strong at that one position. They needed to fill other holes. They had a wide receiver need. They also had a need at offensive tackle. So the fact that they didn't address that, especially since those two positions are very deep in this draft, and they didn't address it, it's almost like they missed out on that, and then they picked somebody that they didn't really need.
So, who's is there an obvious winner other than Bengals going first, which was obvious? Is there an obvious winner? You said you're still kind of evaluating this draft, Stat Pat. Of course, you said you're kind of still evaluating what's going on here. Is there a clear winner?
Clear winner? No, I do know there's some teams that really got better. So for a lot of people, CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma was one of the top wide receivers, if not the top wide receiver in the draft. He was projected to go as high as number 11 to the Jets. And the fact that he dropped all the way down to, I think, the 17th to 17. Dallas Cowboys, it just makes them that much more explosive. They have, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. They just gave Amari Cooper that contract. They got Michael Gallup. Of course, you know, they, like I said, they have the offensive line. And if Dak actually does show up and become above average, they have an offense that can pose a big threat. And you think about it, I mean, the NFC East is really a wide open division. You got the Giants. You have the Redskins. I mean, Eagles win, but the Eagles win the division at 9-7. You know, it's not like they're killing and running away at 11-5, 12-4, stuff like that. So Dallas is in a good position. I think they're one of the earlier winners. I do like what the Colts did. There's a few winners. I'm a Raider fan, and they had a head scratcher at number 19 with Arnett. It was a DB or as a cornerback that was projected to go in the third round that they picked in the first round. But, you know, one thing about the draft, it's not about what we perceive. It's what the teams think and what they feel is a good fit for their team. And, you know, and last year the Raiders got drafted in a poor draft. But in retrospect, look at it, and we had one of the best draft class last year. So it all depends. You know, these things are hard to gauge right now. It takes about 3 years to really fully evaluate a draft class, but so far so good with the Dallas Cowboys.
I have a question though. Not really about the draft, but how did Jameis Winston get the job and Cam Newton not have one yet?
Good question.
Because, you know, I felt like Jameis Winston was like, you know what? Something that's never been done before is throwing 30 touchdowns or 30 interceptions. I wanna be the first to do that.
Yeah, that's bad. That's
and,
all.
And bad. I'm like, what do they see in this guy? He's a little bit of a knucklehead. You know, he's not way off the rails, but I mean, dude, you got Cam Newton there. Why would you not? Does Cam Newton have that much drama behind him versus Jameis, you know, based on the talent?
It's to answer that, it's perceived drama that I think is what's keeping him out of the job. Like you said, that makes no sense. I think what Jameis Winston had, 30 interceptions last year?
Yeah.
Like straight 30 interceptions. Like, how do you do that? That's like, I mean, you played a 16-game season. You almost had two interceptions per game. That is ridiculous. I mean, your touchdown to interception ratio couldn't even be great enough to make up for those two
touchdowns. Yeah, he had 33 touchdowns.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you literally are almost a 1-to-1 ratio. That you need to be at least, for a good quarterback, 3-to-1, at least 3-to-1 to be a good, and 60% of your passes. So you got to be a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Plus, you need to be at least, you know, 60% from passing. And, you know, and you start looking at these numbers, he's way off the mark on both of those. So, yeah, it's the fact that he has those numbers and able to back up a quarterback like Drew Brees, where precision is all about their offense, it is a head-scratcher. But then it also says something what the league perceives about perceives on Cam Newton.
Yeah. Now, there were some extremely hilarious moments because of the virtual draft, of course. The internet is undefeated, and the virtual draft, of course, paid off in many different ways. But you already brought up CeeDee Lamb, and of course, I think that's probably the highlight so far, when he gets the call. His girlfriend takes the phone when he's on TV, and he rips it back. We had another draft pick accept his call and accept the draft in a bathrobe, I believe.
Yeah, that's my boy. Henry Ruggs III from he got from Alabama, got drafted to the Raiders. So yeah, he came in with the Old Spice. For some reason, he was the guy the Old Spice picked, and we actually got him.
So he's getting paid already. And then I think Money Mike, you were talking about another story.
Yeah, yeah. You have John Runyon. You know, he's had his phone. He was over there texting. Not sure who was stitching at the time, right where his thumb was, and he declined the call from Wisconsin, and then he tried to call him back, and they didn't pick up. Luckily, about a minute later, they gave him a call, sixth-round draft pick, you know, so, you know, that would probably have been one of the most scariest moments of my life. Something like that would have happened. But, so he got the call back. And look, I have to say, look, Mr. Irrelevant, he's like, that's my favorite pick of the draft all the time. So I want to say congratulations to Tay Crowder. You know, he was the final pick to the Giants, and he got drafted. And I know right around, you know, going to the final pick, you kind of get discouraged. So congratulations to Mr. Irrelevant. And I actually hope he makes a team.
Yeah, it's too bad that he can't get the parade that he usually gets, you know.
Awesome. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to what was some fun TV that we've been watching. Of course, they were talking about The Last Dance, Michael Jordan's and the Chicago Bulls' last season, their last championship run. Tonight's episode, there are two episodes, and of course, it always focuses on the team, but it really focused on Rodman and Rodman's antics and also contribution to the team, which should definitely be highlighted. It was excellent. I mean, it was a show just like we knew. We pretty much knew, I think, everything about Rodman. I don't know that I learned anything new, nothing really shocking or surprising. That would probably be hard to do at this point, to be shocked or surprised about Rodman if you followed his career. What did you guys pick up on tonight's show? What do you think? What do you got there, Money?
You know, first of all, I'm a Dennis Rodman fan. I love everything I love the fact I always knew that he was able to project where the rebound would come off the ball, but I've never actually heard him explain it. So, you know, so it's one of those things where you kind of get about a player, but you get a little bit more of the insights. I knew that he went to Vegas in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jordan's take on it, you know, was different. Gave a little bit more insight. I studying Rodman, or not necessarily studying him, but watching him, his career, what he had to go through, him always needing to have like a friend or somebody that would actually show that he cared about him. You know, his story is actually kind of, you gotta feel sorry for him if you really get to learn about Rodman and kind of what he went through. He just wanted to be like accepted, you know. I didn't realize, like, I guess the biggest thing that I learned was when Jordan was like, hey, man, I need you right now. Come on. And then he was like, I'm the man. And then all of a sudden, Vivek come back. He's like, okay, I don't need you anymore. You know? So, so you kind of go like, oh, man, he just really wants to be loved and accepted. And, you know, I just want to give Rodman a hug sometimes. Say, hey, man, you know, you love and appreciate it. But I will say one more thing. I think it's absolutely amazing that this dude was in the type of shape he was in with all the abuse he was doing to his body, with the smoking, the drinking, the partying, and he was out running everybody. So he was a Hall of Famer, but how great do you think he could have been, Pat, if he would have had Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan work ethic?
You know, he would have been a different player, right? So if he would have had that business-like attitude to the game of basketball, then we wouldn't get eccentric Rodman. So in a way, we haven't really got a character like Rodman since Rodman. So the fact that he's Rodman, the legend and that all that aura kind of still grows. Like, he's still that dude. Like, you see Rodman, you're like, yeah, that dude like is like the new Hugh Hefner. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you see him still to this day in his 50s, kind of like partying right now. Yeah, you expect him to be doing that. And it still haven't been a character like that and as authentic as he is. It's not like you can try to be Rodman, but he was authentic. That's just who he was. And I thought what was really interesting about the episode is the fact that they allowed Rodman to be eccentric. Now, it was funny that Madonna pretty much put him on that path. Pretty much, you know, saying, be who you want to be, don't conform. Because basically, the Bad Boys had those strong personalities. They were just letting him be the goon. Like, they weren't really trying to cultivate any kind of basketball skills, anything like just go out and beat everybody. Yeah, he knew he had, you know, basketball skills, and Chuck Daly knew that more than anybody. But for the most part, they were allowing him just to be the goon. Where when it comes to the Bulls and Phil Jackson has that connection with him, with the Native American and the admiration of the culture, then they were able to connect. And I got a little teary-eyed when I thought about that, because like you said, you want to give him a hug, and you knew, even though we on the outside thought that Robin was just out there doing his own thing, and he's just, you know, a square peg in a round hole, Phil Jackson actually had his arm around Rodman the whole time. And he knew him. And he knew him better than anybody else. Michael Jordan knew him too, though. Michael Jordan wouldn't allow even the thought of him going to Vegas. If he trusts that, if he gets his mind right, he's going to be that dog I need him.
You know what? But see, I think Michael Jordan trusted Phil's more than he trusted Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because he didn't want Phil in the first place, right? I mean, he was, right. I mean, it's the interesting about this whole thing is like, because we knew about the stories, right? We knew about Doug Collins. Doug Collins is the person that couldn't get over the hump that's his legacy. He couldn't get over the hump. He couldn't beat the Pistons. Phil Jackson beat the Pistons, and there's the story is born. Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson, they beat the Pistons. They win championships, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, like, I'm so glad that Doug Collins, like, let me let you know, he was MVP of the league.
Right.
He was the player of the league.
Right.
You know, he was this one first. I mean, he was this under my tutelage. It wasn't like that Phil Jackson come through and he just taking his little young wild Mustang and whatever and then turning him into Jordan. Yeah. Like, he was Jordan under me.
I agree, Pat. I love how he threw that in. Because I think he just kind of like, was like, let y'all know he was MVP. He was All-Star MVP, Defensive Player of the Year.
Right.
You know, and that's all because of me. You know, so he's getting the Mark Jackson right now. Like, the reason why the Warriors are who they are is because I created that, made that team, and gave that team that personality.
I would call it the Del Harris, but yeah, it might be.
The Del Harris.
The Del Harris. That's that. Hey, all our Laker fans out there, y'all know exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. That's definitely the deal here. And once again, Phil Jackson was the savior to take us over the hump.
Exactly.
Yeah, but see, Del Harris, you know, he didn't believe in Kobe, so.
Yeah. Now, one thing I did learn, I guess I didn't say I didn't learn too much, but one thing I learned, it seemed that he was a little bit more honest, at least about the rifle situation. When he glanced in the camera, he made it obvious that that was definitely a cry out for help, but maybe a suicide attempt at that point. That had failed and he fell asleep, so maybe he was intoxicated and such. But
I think they kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, is it a, did the Detroit just say, we're out of here, we don't need this? Or did they not support their guy? Did they just run? Is that what you do? Chicago took him, put their arms around him, and look what they got. What do you do in that situation?
You know, I think they kind of glossed over it. On Dennis Rodman 30 for 30, more detail into that. It was, he was really heartbroken when Chuck Daly passed away. And he saw Chuck Daly like his father, mm-hmm. Like a major father figure. So they didn't really touch on it in this episode. But so it was a little bit more deeper than what they said, that he was having a dark time and we couldn't find him, and then they found him with a registered gun to him. So, you know, the real story is, you know, or more to the story is, Chuck Daly, he kind of was lost because he didn't have anybody to, he, you know, every, I look at it like this, every child wants to be disciplined. They don't know that they want to be disciplined, but every child wants to be disciplined, wants to be told what to do. Well, that's, they need to have that feeling.
They need boundaries.
And Dennis Rodman, growing up, didn't necessarily have that. He didn't have a great relationship with his mom. Historically, then he went over to a complete white town, and then he was trying to find love over there. And, you know, he preferred, you know, he just had a real interesting upbringing, and he just like ended up in college just because it was just something to do, you know. You know, so
it was just luck. Dumb luck.
Yeah, just pretty much luck.
Ends up in college.
They kind of braised over that, but I will say this: Chicago definitely was a savior, because in San Antonio you got David Robinson, and David Robinson is like goody two shoes. So he doesn't understand.
You got not only that, like you got like the Admiral, right? Which was David Robinson. Then you get the coach that actually did fucking go to Army. I mean, he literally went to Army. He was there. Popovich was really from that program. So you got him as the Army guy from Army Academy. You have the Naval Academy dude and David Robinson. Like, yeah, like you said, like goody two shoes. It was really a military type of situation going on in San Antonio at the time. And everybody, I mean, even if you look down at all the people they had, I mean, they had Sean Elliott. All these guys were just like straight laced dudes. Nobody was out of pocket. You know, he come through and it was
green hair. They was like, what is this dude doing?
Dude, this is San Antonio in 1994, 95. It's not San Antonio in 2020. This is 1995 San Antonio. So we're still easing ourselves into having anybody other than, you know, like the sports players, they do the sports a certain way. They conduct themselves in a certain manner, and that's how we go about it, and that's it. And, you know, but him looking the way he did kind of ruffled some feather, you know. And one thing I noticed about, like, going back to, like, the coaches, like you said, Chuck Daly did give Rodman a structure, but then once he was able to grow out of that, Phil Jackson really did allow him to grow and flourish as a man. And so that's what I did like about this episode, because like you said, like Chuck Daly was that dude. It's almost like when you think about Mike Tyson and Custom Auto. It's almost the same stories you hear. Like Mike Tyson was not the Mike Tyson you know, because he had, you know, had Custom Auto. But when he died, that father figure went down, and then he was pretty much, ain't nobody. I mean, Terry Atlas ain't nobody. Mickey right. Rooney. No one can get him back into where he was before. You know,
yes, man. After that point, he's already
right. Everybody,
well,
yeah.
And you got Don King that's over there just selling everything.
Right. And so, good thing that Rodman didn't have a Don King, and he had a Phil Jackson that understood him on a spiritual level, and allowed, like, he knew, like, I'll let him go to Vegas. Like, he knew that. Like, Phil Jackson, like, you think about it, Phil Jackson did some wild things with the Lakers. But I forgot about that. It really hit me. I forgot about that. I was like, yeah, he did go to Vegas. And I said, while I was thinking about it, yeah, and he went with Carmelo Lecce. And sure enough, Carmelo Lecce is the next person. I'm like, I know it. He went Carmelo Lecce. Like, that's how wild it was. He was in Vegas with Carmelo Lecce during the season. Like, and she was like, I didn't know that he needed to be back. You mean he wasn't in the offseason?
No.
And literally, it's not the offseason.
No.
Like,
no.
Anything else is a time.
It literally was like okay, you need a vacation. It's Monday. We play on Thursday. Is 2 days good enough? We need you on Thursday. literally, that's kind of like how it was. Like, you can't miss a game, but yeah, we want to go 2 days.
When he said 48 hours, man. Yeah. When he said 48 hours, and everybody, like, it's almost like, you know, when they say actors break the fourth wall when they look right into the camera, it's almost like there was that moment where he's like, and y'all know he's not going to be back in 48 hours. We all knew. Like, when they said it, I almost laughed so hard because you and I, everybody know, he's not coming back. It takes about 3 hours to get there. So you done taken out of the 48. You need all that time. Like, and the time, the way the clock went from, like, 48 hours, and it went to the red, like, how much? It was, like, 96 hours. Like, he just doubled that real quick. Like, it was still... It was pretty funny.
You know, Rodman was really a trailblazer. You know, he really challenged masculinity in sports. Came out in drag, obviously, wearing women's clothing and makeup in an extremely masculine sport at the time.
Marrying himself.
Right.
Marrying himself, yeah. I mean, you know, he did obviously some outlandish stuff. I think everyone always suspected that he had some issues. Everyone knew, you know, some of it was obvious. I don't know how he's doing now. Hopefully he's dealing with it better now.
I think he seemed like he's kind of, you know, okay. Like he's been aware of what he is now. Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. How great of coach would Robbie be?
What type of coach?
Listen.
Or a rebounding coach.
Now, wait a minute.
Like, you a position coach. That, like, you teach the rebounds.
No.
You are not a... You're in charge of the whole stuff.
Okay. Okay, so wait a minute. Okay. Let's roll with this, okay? Let's roll with this for a moment.
Hypothetical.
All right, let's go.
Hypothetical. Yeah. Now, you guys know if this was football, he would have a place. He would have a place on that football team to coach this one particular skill, and he'll probably be one of the best coaches in that one particular skill. The only reason why that doesn't work in basketball is because there's not that many coaches. But I've always said, man, if Rodman got his head together, he'll be a really, really good coach. Because he understands the game. He understands, he understands that rotation of the ball determines where the ball is going to come off. He understands how to play defense, you know, and stand beside somebody and get in their head. I mean, he has a lot of...
Did he mentor the same way that Kobe was at the Mamba Academy, the same way many players do? I know Olajuwon actually taught a lot of players some moves after he retired. He can be a specialty player and actually teach rebounds and positioning. I guess it's whether his heart is in it anymore to commit to that.
But you know what? But see, I mean, his personality... I think he would love that if somebody, because he would feel needed. You know what I mean? Like, hey, Rodman, can you teach me something?
All right, let's continue to break it down, though. So we're talking about him going to a job. Okay, so if we're talking about in an aspect where he literally has to be somewhere every day on the time. Are you saying that Dennis Rodman is going to make that commitment for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? What kind of coach are we asking Dennis Rodman to be? Because if you know he's on the sideline, we're looking at Dennis Rodman to do something other than coach.
Just so, a specialty coach, like a shooting coach, but not.
Okay, so let me. But, okay, so let's ask you this.
For a team.
Let's ask you this.
Off season, he works with.
Off season, bro. That's off season. He has a rebounding camp, but he is not on somebody with a suit with rings.
No.
His nose and lips, thinking about he coming out there.
So let me ask you this. So maybe he's not coming to no game. But he could, you know, after practices, he could go, you know.
But then you're talking about, what I'm saying is, I'm trying to tell you, dude, we're talking about Dennis Rodman and commitment. That's what we're saying here. Like, that is, I know it sounds huge and it's a big concept, but it's really the essence of what we're talking about. That man has to be somewhere all the time. He's out, bro. He's not doing it, dude.
Okay.
He might do it just because it's cool, but he ain't doing it, and he's not. That's not his job. He's not looking at. Remember Darvin Ham?
How much money he needs?
Yeah, Cartwright.
Okay, but answer my first question. Would he be a good coach
today?
Knowledge to offer.
Yes. He will be a good coach for the day that you need him to coach. If you're saying that he's going to be a good coach that's going to be on your team to allow your team to get to the next level, I am got reservations for that.
He's a guest coach. He's a special guest coach.
Yes, he is, dude.
So Pat, you're head coaching. I come up with this idea. Are we giving him a consultant role?
You can consult.
No, we're just giving our players permission to work with them if they want to on their own risk, on their own time. If you want to work with them, you can. That's it.
So Jeff, you're not even putting them on payroll.
No.
See, I was thinking about giving him some kind of like, you know how Doug Collins did Tex Winter, put him behind the bench, put him on the stands. I'll put him in the stands, but he,
Nah, man, the second you do that, he gets bored. The second you do that, he's bored with it. That's it. It's over. He's bored with that.
That's what I'm talking about. But you know what, guys? There was some other stuff. I mean, I know it was the Rodman thing, but the fourth episode also went into just the trials that Jordan and Pippen. They went back and they talked about all the Bulls. I mean, I like the cameo from Horace Grant. I'm like, hey, Horace, I kind of like shouted out when I saw
Horace. Man, Horace Grant looks out of shape, bro.
Well, I give him a pass. He's a three-time champion. I'm going to give him
a pass. Yeah, BJ looks still a good. Patrick look a little old. Yeah.
He's a GM. So, you know, is he still a GM with the Bulls or he was the GM with the Bulls? I don't know.
Yeah. I think he still is.
Yeah, I think he's still.
But the fact that, you know, there were a lot of different stories about what was going on, like how that last moment where the Bulls actually beat the Pistons.
Yeah.
That last moment was. And you know, I did see Jordan's still upset. Jordan doesn't want to hear nothing about that at all. Like, he's like, look, man, you know what it was. You know what it was, and it was when I heard Isaiah say it, like, look, man, Celtic, y'all thinking this is like different, like this story that is out there that Mikal stopped us and said thank you and, you know, congratulations or anything like that. Like, nah, I had to stop him and tell him what's up, and he then said, okay, you go beat those guys. But he's felt that it was just how you were supposed to do it. I still, at the same time, it was classless. I think he definitely should have shook his hand. I mean, you see what Magic did. Magic was gracious in defeat when they hugged him in the hallway when he got to the finals.
Yeah, but you know the real interesting thing about that, man. Let me put it like this. How much onus is it actually on Isaiah Thomas? Because it wasn't Isaiah Thomas' idea. It was Bill Laimbeer's idea to walk off the court.
Okay.
Isaiah is the leader of the team, and Isaiah say either yes or no, let's go. But Laimbeer was the one that actually, and I'm just going to throw that out to you guys. So, you know, what do you think?
Well, players are responsible for their own behavior, but that was their role. They were the bad boys. What did you expect them to do? Were all of a sudden they going to change into nice guys?
You know what?
That was their mentality the whole series. That was their mentality for 4 years. Great point. What do you expect? They lived it. They weren't just playing characters at that time. They were champions with that role. They lived that role. So I don't hold it against them, but I also don't think that Isaiah should be backtracking and going, oh, well, now, no, fucking own it. Own it. You did it. Own it. Say, we were not, you know, that's not what we did at that time, and we still wouldn't do it today.
Right.
And that's it. Own it. Don't backtrack on it.
That's it. I mean, maybe he's still mad because, you know, he got blackballed from the Dream Team. I mean, you know, maybe that's also sticking his craw because that's what happened. You did this and you got pretty much left off the greatest team ever assembled. Because I'm sorry, as much as I like Clyde Drexler, Clyde Drexler should have been over there.
Hey,
over
hey, you forgot about Christian Laettner.
that's a different argument. That argument is between Laettner and Shaq. Mm-hmm. That's the two right there. Because really, Shaq's supposed to be on the Dream Team. You put Shaq on it, it's astronomically better. It's way better. Matter of fact, you have Shaq on there, Shaq in his own little thing. Because Shaq was breaking rims at that time. You put Shaq on the team, it's really cracking. It's really cracking. The Laettner was kind of like the dude that they had to. I don't know what it was for. I mean, I get it. He was a champion player of the year. Christian Laettner was, you know, supposed to be that dude. But really, if we're going back in the time machine, Isaiah Thomas should be on that team and Shaq should be on that team.
Yeah. Well, guys.
Yeah. Well, do you think they've ever spoken? I don't think they have.
What can be said at this point?
No, I know, but I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
it looks like they've spoken and Jordan wasn't having it. And he's like, I'm still not having it. Don't tell me nothing. Don't tell me I've heard it before. Nah. And exactly, he's a competitor. If you do something, own it. Own it.
That's it.
No, I get that, man. But how long? I mean, see, I guess for me, man, it takes a whole lot of energy to be still upset with somebody for over 20 years.
Okay, but I'm gonna just believe this. Leave this on your mind. But if you had to forgive somebody that kept beating you in the head. Because that's basically what it was. It's like, I'm gonna go ahead and then under his direction is to literally beat me up. And now we cool. Like, yeah, man, we cool. I'm surprised him and Rodman were cool because of the fact that he was the one that pushed, like they showed that scene where he literally pushed Pippen two hands. Like he just pushed that dude. And that dude now his teammate. Like, for real, I was like, wow, okay.
Oh, no, well, see, if you know, Pippen wasn't having it. That, again, that was Phil Jackson.
Right. I mean, Pippen actually took it off.
Now, that brings up a good point, brings up another topic here, guys. We're going to have a special podcast guest, and we're going to release a special podcast. And, of course, we've been talking about one of the best defenders here being Dennis Rodman. One of our other favorite defenders of all time would be, of course, Ron Artest, World Peace. And we're going to have tomorrow night Daniel Artest. Daniel Artest hosts a podcast on Facebook Live. And he speaks sports and just about current affairs. And, of course, Daniel is Meta World Peace or Ron Artest's brother. So we're going to have a great time talking with him, and we're going to release that podcast soon. And we're just going to talk about The Last Dance. We're going to talk about basketball, current affairs, and what's going on. So we're really excited about that. And also, of course, be sure to catch the Daniel Artest podcast on Facebook Live, and you can follow him on Instagram because his show is great and it's building a following. He's doing really, really good over there. Guys, we look forward to that. It's been a great night. We look forward to whatever comes this week in our lives of quarantine still. And, of course, the next episodes of The Last Dance. You got any closing remarks there, Money Mike?
Hey, I think it's a great episode. I can't wait to see the other sets because I think now it's going to get really down to the nitty gritty about everything that went on. I mean, you had the first four episodes was an establishment, built up. Now all the characters are in place. So I can't wait to see the other sets because I think it's going to be really intense and it's going to do a full breakdown of the whole year. So, and let me just say this. You guys know the cameras phone Kobe his final year, too. So I'm hoping...
2 years. They said the final 2 years.
Yeah, so I'm hoping in the next couple of years, you know, I'm a homer, but in the next couple of years, we're going to see a Kobe documentary. But, this has done great. I love it, and I can't wait to see the rest. And everybody, wash your hands.
If I had to say something, one thing, I mean, I know we didn't really touch upon this in our podcast, but one thing that I did notice is that there's a debate that's been brewing within the basketball community with who's the greatest of all time. And of course, Jordan has always been that number one dude. But of course, we know LeBron James is now firmly in the conversation of the best of all time. Now, what I have noticed in this documentary, LeBron haven't had trials like this. And I don't know what that's going to do for the legacy of LeBron. And it probably won't do anything for his legacy, against it, I'm saying. But you see what Jordan went through. And if everybody of recent memory know exactly how LeBron got there, you make your own decision, whoever you think is best. But I'm actually looking at somebody that actually persevered and then got on the mountain, top of the mountain organically. And why we as old basketball fans, why we revere a person like Michael Jordan, because we can see that we hurt when he hurt. And to see him go ahead and get beat up and be able to triumph, I don't know if we can really say that with LeBron James. Not an indictment of him. It's not just the fact. And when you see how championships are manufactured rather than won, you get my drift. And I'll just leave it at that.
But, hey, I am not a LeBron fan. I'm a Laker fan, though, but not a LeBron fan. So, just to piggyback on top of that, my biggest thing about LeBron is when he went in playoff mode, we didn't make the playoffs. I'll just leave it like that. You know, when Jordan said, hey, DJ gonna have a bad night, they had a bad night. I'm upset at what he told me last time. It's gonna be a rough night for him. They had a rough night. LeBron, playoff mode, did not give us the playoffs. So, to me.
Okay, I get it. I'm not the biggest LeBron fan at all. At the same time,
guys,
let's be honest here though. LeBron James definitely have the Lakers number one in the West Conference. If LeBron's not on the team, we're not number one in the Western Conference. Number one in the Western Conference.
No,
so we got to put the hate down a little bit we won't be there. So who's going to take us there?
I'm not hating.
Paul George won't take us there. If we have Paul George on the team, will Paul George be doing what LeBron doing right now?
I think we're not giving enough credit to AD. If AD not on the team, we're not.
Right. But that goes with anything, right? That goes for, like, you got to have a 1-2 punch.
I think you guys actually bring up the point, and I think it'll never be compared. And one of the reasons why true Jordan believers will never, ever change their mind is because the physicality of the game has changed. And they don't let the players get hit. They don't let the players take the hard fouls anymore. So you'll never, ever, everyone will always say, every Michael Jordan old school basketball fan is always going to say that, yeah, but LeBron played in the era where, you couldn't even get hit. And you say, well, he was so big and unstoppable with the rules, with fouls, with the way that they call them these days. If I was Jordan, that's what I'd be saying. I mean, it's essentially like, I mean, it's not even the same. It's apples and oranges. The game has changed so much. And also, when we're talking about the competition, you have the competition that Jordan played against, which were icons and just powerhouses and powerhouse teams. Now you really, if you look at LeBron and who LeBron beat, they were elite finesse teams. He didn't go against very hard knuckle, just dig it out bruising teams. And I think that, and he can't control who he competed against and who he played against. He played who was in front of him. But the fact that he didn't go against those teams and didn't go undefeated in the finals says, what would he have done back then? He probably would have got knocked on his rear. And would he have been able to come up against that, or would he have just been another guy who's getting pounded in the paint?
No. No, you know what? I think mentally he's not that tough. That's just my opinion.
But maybe that's just because he hasn't had to grow that way because the game evolved. Would he have evolved as a tougher player in those days? He would have had to in order to stay in
the game. He would have had to. And I think that's what – I think that's also – why, I mean, look, Kobe Bryant has a mentality the way he did because he looked at what it was going to take to get through. I mean, he's looking for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, Kobe was just waiting for his Pistons. He was waiting for it. He got it. He got his. You know, he got with the Boston Celtics. He got that, what it felt like. Just a glimpse. Of course, it wasn't as hard. But those championships against the Celtics, I mean, they literally were letting them hack. They were letting them hack. Like, they were letting Detroit hack. And he got a bit of that. But when you see, I mean, like I said, by no means, I'm not trying to bash on LeBron or anything like that. But I do want to let people know, if there was a foul in the 80s, there's no such thing as a flagrant foul. So basically, if I foul you and you hit the ground hard, is literally just two free throws and ball out of bounds. There's no one's getting suspended. You are still hurt with a dislocated shoulder or wrist or any of that kind of stuff that goes along with falling on a damn hardwood floor. But there's no repercussions. There's nothing. There's no disciplinary action coming from the league going to these players. And so they have free reign to really knock your block off. If you thinking that you could just dunk on anybody and they're like, I don't care about your dunk, I'm just going to push you in the middle of your solar plexus and make you fall down, then you're playing two different games. You're trying to score. He's trying to hurt. We're not playing that game now. We're looking at money. We're looking at all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, we're on Twitter. There's like Instagram. There's like all kinds of stuff that the media, the scrutiny is not like that back then. So I know we're comparing errors and stuff like that, but a lot of players can admit, you got Mahorn that looked like he barely can. I mean, Mahorn looked like he barely can run up the court, up and down. Looked like he's just ready to go ahead and chow down on a sandwich, like, you know, after the game. Like, you know what I'm saying? These dudes were the ones that were just clotheslining people to get to the, like, so, like, look, thinking LeBron probably would have got a jump shot because he had to get a jump shot. Going in and, you know, going to the lane is hazardous. So you have to develop that. Or you're Jerome Kersey. You know what I'm saying? You're a big bruising guy that can get to the line or get this up, but you pretty much have no skill outside of going to the rack. So if you can't do that and you can't shoot the ball and you can't evolve your game, you're pretty much going to be cast aside. Now, that's pretty much the end of it. I mean, that's what I think.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but has anybody ever schemed to try to figure out how to stop LeBron? Oops. I know people have schemed to try to stop Kobe in a new era. And of course, we know Jordan with the Jordan rules. But has anybody ever schemed to say, this is what we need to do to stop?
Well, you can play zone.
Yeah,
you can play zone. Yeah. So you think about that. If you think about that, I can literally have a dude camp in the middle of the lane. Then I'm waiting. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can literally have that part of the game affected, you know, whereas before it was not like that in the NBA. I mean, back then in the 80s. But you think about it, that's what they can do.
Let me just say, I think LeBron, if you try to compare apples to apples, you have to ask the question, will LeBron be able to play in the 80s and 90s? I think, yes, he would be able to. I don't think he is a megastar. He's above average player. You know, and but if you go and take Jordan,
oh yeah,
and put him into our area, take Kobe, put him into that era, even freaking Curry with the way he handles the ball and shoots and dribbles, you know, you could pick them up and have them be probably just as effective. I think LeBron would be an above average player. You know,
I think if you put Curry in that era, I think they elbow him to the soloplex at the half court line and do not let him take a shot, and they get the ball out of his hand. No way does he make it in today's era. No way. He gets
pounded. But wait a minute though. Okay,
Mr. Mapstick Ankle Boy. No way.
No, but wait a minute though. Okay,
He's Kerr with handles. He literally.
Yeah, you're not giving him Reggie Miller though. You're not giving him Reggie Miller at least.
What I mean, it was
okay. I mean, Reggie Miller fought through three
okay, and to get Miller also, Kerr, and Reggie Miller is also what three inches taller than he is too.
Yeah,
wait, three.
I don't know. I mean, wasn't Reggie Miller like 6'6"?
Yeah, I think it's a lot.
I think Curry was 6'1".
Yeah, but I gotta check that. I think it's more than that. That's for sure.
Okay, so you just saying right there, off top, he's shorter, and I know what short dudes look like. I know what short dudes were doing back in the NBA back then. I know what short dudes was. So you're saying that because he got dribble, all right? Iverson had dribble, but at the same time, Iverson used to take it to the rack and get pounded. Dude would have got pounded, and he was and dude, he's light, bro. He light. He light. So. I'm saying, yeah.
Curry is 6'3". Let me look up Miller.
I think he's like 6'6", 6'7", something like that. I think he's like, you know, so.
At least 6'6".
Yeah, so what are we talking about? And that's 6'8". And Curry being 6'3", that's generous. That's generous. Him being 6'3". That's generous. Sorry, I don't believe it.
6'7". No.
See, no, mm-hmm. no. See, and you said, and he had shot, and he had the speed that he did, going around the same screens. All right, but like Jeff said, you gotta eventually. I have to push you. I have to push, and let's understand the beauty of the hand check. Don't understand the beauty of the hand check when you're not, unless you're able to use it. If you're able to at least put your hand on somebody's hip and literally push them somewhere else and they're not wanting to go, that is a game changer. You have to play off defense with no hands. We play karate back in the 80s. I mean, we're chopping people's up. You know what I'm saying?
What keeps replaying in my mind is Bynum and J.J. Barea. I just keep saying that going over in my mind. Bynum and J.J. just game after game with Curry. Just Bynum
and that's
J.J.
happening. That's happening, you know, and that's happening more often than you think. And it was a big thing. They write gas because it was the playoffs. Man, I'm thinking like 80s, like that's a good hard foul. I swear to God, just 5 to 6 years before that, Shaq did that to Tony Parker mm-hmm. in the playoffs. Tony Parker went through the hole, tried to go for layup. Shaq, boom. First play of the game, boom, took the technical. That's how we're doing it right now. We playing old school rules. Yes. Mm-hmm. So you saying, and we always have the debate, like, think about Shaq, right? And I know we probably have to wrap this up, but if you think about Shaq, if you put him in any era, you allow Shaq to be tough, he gonna be tough regardless. If you put Curry against Shaq, what's gonna happen to Curry? What's gonna happen to Paul George? What's gonna happen to any of these cats that they thinking they dunking on Wally Cauley-Stein or they dunking on, you know, people like, you know what I'm saying, the Rudy Gobert of the world. You know what I'm saying? These are defensive players. They are getting two fouls in on a bench against Shaq. Anybody going through that lane, they're getting demolished. And if you ain't even at least 250. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, so, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm on a tangent right now. But, yeah, we were talking about mixing eras. I can't even see Curry involved in the 80s. I just can't even see it.
All right. I'll roll with that.
Deal.
But do you agree with me that LeBron, how good a player is LeBron in 80s and 90s?
Top 20.
Without a jump shot, I told you, Jerome Kersey.
Jerome Kersey. Jerome Kersey.
he's barely making an All-Star team.
He doesn't have a jump shot. It's not consistent. Not a mid-range game. That's the '80s right now. You got to have a mid-range game. You don't have a mid-range game like Karl Malone. I mean, it's what it is.
That's it.
All right. Go.
Good talks, guys. Again, special podcast coming out with Daniel Artest coming out soon. Guys, Money Mike, Stat Pat, thanks for a great podcast. It was a great night. We'll be back with you guys later. Have a good one. Lakers for life.
Peace.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram at The Profanity Nation to keep up on LA sports and breaking news. And check in online at theprofanitynation.com. Thank you.
Hours a day, 7 days a week, on demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked.